All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're going way back to 1988 to be exact.
Oh, wow. Okay. What happened in 88?
Well, that's when the New York Court of Appeals decided a case called Asian Americans for Equality v. Koch. And you know, it's a really interesting one because it gets to the heart of this dilemma, this tension that so many cities face.
Okay. I'm intrigued. What kind of dilemma?
It's that question of how you balance encouraging development, revitalizing neighborhoods
Right.
with the need to make sure there's enough affordable housing.
Especially in a place like New York City.
Exactly. I mean, think about it. You want places like Chinatown to thrive. You want to see new businesses and investment,
Sure.
but you don't want that to come at the expense of pushing out the people who've lived there for years, the people who might not be able to afford those shiny new apartments.
Yeah.
And that's where this case really gets interesting, because it makes you think about the role of the courts. Well, it forces us to ask, when should courts step in and second-guess how a city's trying to manage its growth? How much deference should they give to those local decisions about planning and zoning?
Those are some big questions. So, where are we getting all this info from for today's deep dive?
Oh, great question. We've got some really interesting excerpts. Sort of mixed bag, actually.
Oh, like what?
We've got some stuff from Pace to Text. It's got like podcast guidance, a case brief, a standard brief, even some perplexity analysis.
Wow, they really threw everything in there.
Yeah, it's actually super cool. And just to be clear, this paste-to-text thing, it was like guidance for a hypothetical podcast aimed at law students.
Okay, so we're adapting it, making it our own.
Exactly. So we'll take the core ideas, the legal meat of it, and break it down for our listeners.
Sounds good to me. Let's dive in.
Let's do it. All right, so back to 1980s New York City. Picture it. Chinatown facing some real challenges, overcrowding, buildings that were, well, let's just say they'd seen better days.
Yeah, I can imagine. So what did the city do?
They decided to try something new. They created what they called the Special Manhattan Bridge District, or SMBD for short.
Okay, SMBD. Catchy. So what was that all about?
Well, imagine it like this. They took about 14 blocks near the Manhattan Bridge and basically gave it a zoning makeover. The goal was to revitalize the area, encourage new development.
Okay, makes sense. I guess that could go a lot of different ways, though.
It could, right. And that's where it gets tricky. So one of the tools they used was to offer developers what they called bonus density.
Bonus density? What's that?
Basically, it meant developers could build bigger, taller buildings than the zoning would normally allow.
Oh, so they get to build more. I see where this is going.
You're quick. But there was a catch. To get that bonus density, developers had to offer some community benefits.
Ah, so it wasn't just a free-for-all.
Nope. And one of the developers involved was Henry Street Partners. They agreed to contribute $500,000 towards affordable housing projects as part of their community benefits package.
$500,000. That sounds like a pretty decent chunk of change.
It does, right? But not everyone was convinced. Enter Asian Americans for Equality, or AAFE.
AAE, okay.
They, along with some low-income residents, weren't buying it. They were worried that this whole SMBD thing, with its focus on market rate and even luxury development, would actually end up displacing the people it was supposed to help.
So their concern was that even with those community benefits, the new development would drive up prices and make it even harder for low-income residents to stay in Chinatown.
Exactly. Their argument was that the plan was missing a key ingredient. It didn't require developers to actually include affordable housing units in their new buildings.
Yeah.
It was all based on incentives, not mandates.
Yeah, I see their point. So what did they do? Just complain about it.
Oh no. They went to court, they filed a lawsuit, arguing that the SMBD was unconstitutional and that it would actually worsen the affordable housing crisis in Chinatown.
Wow. Okay, so they went for it. What happened?
Well, it's a bit of a roller coaster. Initially, the trial court let some of their arguments proceed, but then the appellate division dismissed the whole case.
Oh, so that was it.
Not quite. AAFE and those residents were determined. They appealed all the way to the New York Court of Appeals, the highest court in the state.
Okay, so this is the big leagues now. What did the Court of Appeals do?
Well, that's where things get really interesting. They ultimately sided with the city. They upheld the zoning amendments that created the SMBD, saying that it was a valid use of the city's police power.
Police power. So are we talking about like cops and stuff?
Not exactly. When we talk about police power in a legal context, we're talking about the government's authority to make laws and regulations to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the public.
Okay, so it's more like the power to keep things running smoothly.
Exactly. And in this case, the court saw the SMBD as the city's attempt to address housing issues in Chinatown, even if it wasn't a perfect solution.
Right, right. So even if some people disagreed with the approach, the court basically said, hey, this is the city's job, and we're not going to second guess them unless there's a clear problem.
You got it. The court showed a lot of deference to the city's judgment about how to manage its own development.
Okay, I'm starting to see how this case gets at those big questions you were talking about earlier.
Right. So let's dig a little deeper into the legal arguments here. The court really had to grapple with two main issues, right? First, did the fact that the SMBD didn't require affordable housing actually make it unconstitutional?
Yeah, that was AAFE's big point, right? They thought it needed to be mandatory.
Exactly. And the second issue was whether the SMBD was a form of what's called exclusionary zoning.
Exclusionary zoning? I'm not sure I'm familiar with that term. Can you break it down for us?
Of course. It's basically when zoning rules, even if they don't explicitly say so, end up disproportionately harming certain groups. Like they make it harder for people with lower incomes or minorities to live in a particular area.
So the argument here was that by not mandating affordable housing and instead relying on these incentives, the city was creating a situation where the less wealthy residents of Chinatown would be gradually pushed out.
That's the gist of it. They were worried that the new development would attract wealthier residents, drive up prices, and make it impossible for those who couldn't afford the new market rate rents to stay.
I see. So how did the court analyze these arguments? Did they just make it up as they went along?
Not at all. They used a test from a previous case called Berenson v. Town of Newcastle, called the Berenson test.
Berenson test. Okay. What's that all about?
It's a two-part test to determine whether a zoning plan is legally sound. The first part asks, does the zoning plan reflect a well-considered plan?
Okay, so basically, did the city do their homework? Did they actually put some thought into this?
Right, and the Court of Appeals majority said yes. The city had done its homework. They pointed to a study from 1979 that had been done on the Manhattan Bridge area as the basis for the SMBD.
So they were saying, look, this wasn't just something they pulled out of a hat. There was a process, a rationale behind it.
Exactly. They also highlighted that the plan did include those incentives, like the bonus density we talked about, which were supposed to encourage the development of affordable housing and community facilities.
Okay, so that's the first part of the test. What about the second part?
Yes. The second part is all about the bigger picture. It asks whether the zoning plan considered the housing needs of the broader region, not just the immediate neighborhood.
So it's not just about Chinatown, but about the whole city and maybe even beyond.
Exactly. And here, the majority said that the SMBD, even though it was focused on Chinatown, was still part of New York City's overall plan to address its housing needs.
Okay, so they saw it as fitting into a larger strategy.
Right. However, this is where one of the dissenting judges, Justice Caro, really disagreed.
Oh, so there was a dissenting opinion. This is getting juicy. What did Justice Caro have to say?
Well, they weren't convinced that those incentives the city was offering would actually lead to any significant amount of affordable housing being built.
So they thought the incentives were too weak, not enough to really make a difference.
That's right. In fact, Justice Caro went even further and warned that the plan could actually lead to less affordable housing in Chinatown.
Wait, less? How could that be?
Their concern was gentrification. They argued that as newer and more expensive developments came in, it would put pressure on the existing affordable housing, pushing up rents and potentially forcing longtime residents out.
Ah, I see. So they were worried about the unintended consequences that the plan could backfire and actually make the problem worse.
Exactly. And Justice Caro also took issue with the majority's reasoning on that second part of the Berenson test. They argued that the city had largely ignored the regional housing needs when it came up with the SMBD.
So they didn't think the city had done a good enough job of considering the bigger picture, the impact on the surrounding areas.
That's right. They felt the city had a responsibility to look beyond Chinatown's borders when making these kinds of decisions.
Wow. So even though the court ultimately sided with the city, there were some serious reservations, different perspectives on what the plan might mean for the community.
Absolutely. And there's another judge we should mention, Justice Ash, who concurred with the majority, but still had some interesting things to say.
Oh, a concurring opinion. So they agreed with the outcome, but maybe not all the reasoning.
That's right. Justice Ash thought it might have been wise to have a trial to really dig into whether New York City had truly considered the need for low-cost housing when it created the SMBD.
So they weren't totally convinced that the city had done its due diligence on that front.
It sounds like they had some lingering doubts. And they also expressed concern about the possibility that the zoning rules could end up reinforcing ethnic segregation.
That's a serious concern. You don't want to create communities that are divided along economic and racial lines.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think this case really highlights how complex these issues are. There's this constant tension between trying to revitalize urban areas and ensuring that everyone benefits, that people aren't displaced in the process.
And those concerns about displacement that Justice Kara raised feel especially relevant today, with gentrification happening in so many cities.
It's true. This case really forces us to ask hard questions about the unintended consequences of urban development.
It also underscores the legal concept of judicial restraint, right?
Yes, that's a crucial point. It's the idea that courts should be hesitant to overturn decisions made by elected officials and legislative bodies unless there's a very clear violation of the Constitution.
So even if the judges had some reservations, they ultimately decided to defer to the city's judgment in this case.
That's right. They recognized the city's authority to make decisions about its own development, even if those decisions weren't perfect.
I see. So what are some of the key takeaways from this case? Some of the things our listeners should really remember.
Well, we've already talked about exclusionary zoning, but this case also helps us understand the scope of police power and that idea of judicial restraint in the context of urban planning.
Right. We see how the city used its police power to try and address housing issues, but we also see how the court set limits on how much it was willing to interfere with those decisions.
And the arguments around exclusionary zoning show us that even policies that seem neutral on the surface can have real-world impacts that disproportionately affect certain groups.
It's a reminder that we need to be really thoughtful about the consequences of zoning and how it can shape our communities.
It's so true. And I think it's helpful to look back at some of the actual language from the case, some of the key phrases that really capture the different viewpoints.
Oh, yeah. Like what?
Well, the majority famously said the SMBD amendments were adopted pursuant to a well-considered plan. That really sums up their core reasoning.
Okay, so they believed the city had a plan and had thought it through. What about the dissent?
Justice Caro, in their dissent, really zeroed in on what they saw as a major flaw, saying regional considerations were virtually ignored. That gets to the heart of their disagreement with how the majority viewed the plan.
And then there's Justice Ash with their more cautious perspective.
Right. They suggested that a trial is necessary to determine if low-cost housing was actually considered. That highlights the lingering questions about the city's true intentions and the potential consequences of the SMBD.
Those quotes really paint a picture of the different perspectives within the court and how complex this issue is.
They do. And I think that's what makes this case so fascinating, so relevant, even all these years later. It really forces us to think about how we balance the need for urban development with the need for affordable housing, and how we ensure that everyone benefits from a city's growth.
It's about finding solutions that work for everyone, not just a select few.
Exactly. And I think that's a challenge we're still grappling with today. Asian Americans for Equality v. Koch may have been decided decades ago, but the questions it raises about urban planning, economic forces, and social equity are as relevant as ever.
It's a reminder that these issues are complex and that there's no easy answer, but it's a conversation we need to keep having.
Couldn't agree more. So after this deep dive into Asian Americans for Equality v. Koch, we want to leave you with a question to ponder. Given what we've learned about this case, what are the most effective ways for cities to ensure affordable housing? Can we rely on incentives alone, or do we need stronger measures, like mandatory inclusionary zoning? And how much deference should courts give to city planning decisions, especially when those decisions have the potential to displace vulnerable residents? We don't have all the answers, but we hope this deep dive has given you some food for thought, some new insights into the complex interplay between law, urban development, and social justice. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. This was a good one.
Yeah, really was. Until next time.